Welcome to the Haney Biz Project with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz Companies. He's working tirelessly to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution and share the inspiring stories of the region's most influential leaders. And now, here's Mark Haney.
All right. I'm Mark Haney, and this is the Haney Biz Project, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in our hometown of Sacramento. You know, what if Sacramento became the region most likely to succeed in business? And what if Sacramento entrepreneurs had a competitive advantage simply by growing their business right here in our region? We all know that too many startups, they fail because, you know what? They never unleash their true potential, right? Sometimes we can't get out of our own way, but what if we could change all that? That's what the Haney Biz Project is all about. We are entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs, one entrepreneur at a time, one conversation at a time. And that conversation all begins with one simple question. Are you hanging or are you banging? I'm here with Marcus Haney. And, you know, Marcus, describe to us the difference between hanging or banging. What is that?
Well, hanging, hey, that's okay, too. You're out relaxing on the beach or doing what you do in your downtime.
Hanging's cool.
Absolutely. Got to get enough of that. Going to be doing some hanging tomorrow with the Jared Taylor on the boat, so looking forward
to
doing that. But banging is out there executing on your best opportunity of the time and really putting some feet forward and executing on stuff that really matters for you and your business.
No doubt. And today we have a couple guys that are going to be on the show. We're going to be talking about innovation and about bringing innovative concepts to our business. And now, Marcus, you were in the Marine Corps. You oversee a small limitless limo company.
Yep.
Small limo company. You've got a industrial supply company that you own. What is innovation doing to the industries that you're most involved in?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I think it always goes back to my favorite Marine Corps term. Complacency kills, right?
Ooh, yeah.
So I think that does a lot in the business world too and pertains heavily, because if you're not continuously innovating in your company and looking at what the competition's doing and trying to put yourself one step ahead, then there is someone out there at all times fighting for what you've got.
And I think at this stage of a business, there is not an industry on the planet that is not either being disrupted now by technology and innovation, or it's coming, right?
No doubt.
It's coming for us. And I mean, I think a lot of us, we have to think about how to divide our resources, how to allocate those resources. It's such a dilemma to think about. How do we invest? What do we invest into our existing business to keep it sustainable, to keep it profitable?
Right.
And how much of our resources should be allocated to something that maybe hasn't even been invented yet, right? Something maybe disruptive that could be 2, 3, 4, 5 hills over, but yet you need, if you don't invest some or maybe all over into these areas that are in the area of disruption for future, you may miss the boat. You may be look at what's happening in the grocery industry today, right? It seems to me that everybody is a little bit frantic today because of Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods,
right?
So, you know, Albertsons reacted to that by saying, oh, we're going to go all in on meal deliveries and food deliveries. Albertsons, I mean, it's about time. I mean, we can't wait to be disrupted. We have to know that that's coming to our industry. So, you know, just thinking about that, as we look at this, I mean, software, right? It will disrupt most traditional industries in the next 10 years. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Uber, right? It's a software tool, but they don't own any cars. And, you know, they're the biggest taxi company in the world. You know, is there any industry today that's immune from this disruptive approach to technology?
Any industry? You know, I think that there's always going to be a need for that chauffeur within the transportation industry. That's why Limitless Limos is out there doing what they're doing and competing in that marketplace and not letting Uber stomp us to the ground. But, you know, I always think that there's going to be no comparison for hard work, getting down and innovating person to person. I think that that portion will never be taken away.
No doubt. And so today we got a couple guests on. We're going to be talking about maybe what industries are most ripe for innovation and disruptive technology. And, you know, what does the average startup have in terms of an advantage over maybe a more mature and larger business? But, I mean, learning on this show, I mean, the best way to learn, we all know, is by rolling up the sleeves, getting in the game, working on your own innovative business. But the second best way to learn is by locking yourself in a room with people who have built these successful, innovative companies. Later in the show, we will meet a man that is using an innovative marketing approach to put a dent in the multi-billion dollar coffee industry. Get ready to meet Jared Taylor, the chief people catcher of Black Rifle Coffee Company. And you know, Marcus, in response to what Black Rifle is doing, Starbucks has now launched a home delivery service. Yeah, it's for anyone who is too lazy to walk one block in any direction. Starbucks are
everywhere,
but they cannot compete with Black Rifle and what they are doing there. But coming up after the break, we will meet a man that helps innovative companies break away from the pack. Get ready to meet the highly successful co-founder of GrowthX, Mr. Sean Shepard. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, brought to you courtesy of Five Star Bank. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Now, back to the Haney Biz Project with host Mark Haney.
All right. Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Sun System Technology. I'm Mark Haney, and I am joined by a man who has helped so many companies achieve success with his accelerator program and his business, GrowthX. I'm here with Mr. Sean Shepard. How you doing, Sean?
Great, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great. I want to thank you for coming down today. And a lot of us in Sacramento don't know yet what GrowthX is. Give us an overview of what you're building at GrowthX.
I think the easiest way to explain it is GrowthX is an ecosystem to support entrepreneurship and innovation in any community. The reality is that 70% of funded companies fail. 8 of the top 10 reasons they fail have to do with markets and the people running the companies. Only 2 of those 10 have anything to do with product, yet we encounter over and over again, and understandably so, I respect and appreciate it, but we encounter product-focused founders that don't know anything about how to develop their market.
You know, I have met a few of those people that are more engineering-based, they're very caught up in their product, but yet getting it sold is not so easy for them. And maybe it's because they're just not built that way. So now you guys are building an accelerator, a venture fund, a school, and much more in GrowthX. And you guys are in the heart of San Francisco, yet your processes are being brought to the rest of the world. But let's talk about what you're doing right there in San Francisco, which is the heart of entrepreneurship and innovation and technology in so many ways. Talk to us about specifically what happens when you walk into GrowthX.
Sure. Well, we have a fund to invest in early stage companies. We bring founders and funders together. We have an accelerator to help those companies grow. And then we have an academy to develop the talent that wants to work in the startup ecosystem. And then an innovation group and GrowthX Studios that works with big companies that are afraid of being the next yellow cab in the age of Uber. How do you build relationships with startups? How do you leverage that to create a competitive advantage for your own company? So it becomes a platform to help everybody, entrepreneur, develop and build companies. And look, the reality is that there's access to capital is plentiful. It's there if you know where to look and how to find it. But access to knowledge and know-how is not plentiful. And what we want to do is take all the great things that we've learned and developed and that we know work in Silicon Valley and bring them to the rest of the world.
Well, let's talk about GrowthX a little bit. You founded that a number of years ago. Talk to us about the founding team of GrowthX and how you got started.
Yeah, we're all serial entrepreneurs like you, Mark. We've all been, you know, I grew up, I think we talked about this off the air, but I went to Oakmont High School.
Oakmont High School right here. Roseville, right outside Sacramento.
Yeah, I was raised by a guy who, you know, was with Intel for a lot of years, and so I watched what technology could do. So I've been fortunate. I've started 5 companies. I've sold 3 in a wide variety of products, markets, and verticals. And I've always been a sales and marketing guy. I've been a market developer, not a product developer. I've been fortunate to be teamed up with great product people, and I think that's what it takes. And in this case, my other partner was the founder of Match.com, the world's largest online dating site.
Entrepreneur just like me. Very similar.
Yeah. He raised $90,000 to build the world's largest online dating site.
Yeah, I can relate.
So he figured out how to do, you know, the least amount of work with the most amount of return possible. My other partner, Andrew Goldner, was a corporate lawyer at Skadden and the chief technology counsel at DoubleClick and sold them into Google and then acquired Reuters for the Thomson Reuters family and ran that for many years. Our other partner, Russell Lewis, was the founder of the truck bed liner. He invented it, Rhino Linings. Yeah, he still owns it. 86 countries, executive chairman. So we're all successful entrepreneurs. We all got started getting into investing in companies. And what we realized is that our help was more valuable than our money for the right under the right circumstances. And then how could we help at scale? How could we give back in a way to the pursuit of this profession or discipline or this this human condition or affliction we have called entrepreneurship?
Yeah, it's kind of addictive. You've had a number of exits, but you can't quit it, huh?
No, it's too... So that entrepreneurial spirit is alive and well in every corner of the globe. What isn't alive and well is an understanding of how to do it the right way. So if you do fail, you fail for the right reasons, because there's no market for your product, because you're not solving a problem. Nobody cares about your product. They care about the problems that they have and whether or not you can solve them. And so shifting the mindset of the entrepreneur away from product centricity to market centricity, recognizing that between product, team, and market always wins. It decides in a fairly free market environment anyway, who wins and who doesn't.
So what I'm hearing from you is if they build it, right? If you build it, they may not come, right? You can build the greatest product in the world, but if there is no sales, you have nothing other than a cool product sitting in your lab or in your garage.
No, that's right. And so the fundamental shift that's happened in the last 20 years is that it's never been easier or cheaper to start a company. And it's never been more expensive or difficult to grow it. When I raised money, the first time I raised money from Guy Kawasaki. Some of you may have heard of him. And I raised $8.5 million just to get a minimum viable product to market, just to test it to a first customer.
Wow.
You could build that same product today, 18 years later, for about $200K. Product developers are the new factory workers. That's the reality. All the infrastructure exists now. 90% of the software automation and the workflow and the processes that we've all been talking about can be built pretty quickly with a couple of code monkeys and some workflow processes.
And all you code monkeys out there, we love you, but we happen to be sales guys, so this is no offense from the Haney Biz Project to the engineers and the scientists, but you know what? I agree with you that as entrepreneurs, as people that are responsible for the bottom line and building something that grows into the future, you have to be able to sell that. So what kinds of things do you do as you help accelerate these businesses and these business ventures in teaching them how to get their products from the design stage to actually in customers' hands where they're paying money for it?
We've developed a methodology that works in any industry, sector, market, or product. The idea is that products and markets are unique, but the path to product market fit is not. Every individual has to do the same things. They might not recognize it at the time, but when you talk to them in hindsight, they recognize that those are the actual steps that you had to go through. So our job is to help people figure out how to get the knowledge, skills, and then most importantly, the behaviors necessary to get to the truth.
Yeah.
Whatever that truth is for them. They also have to recognize the reality that the money spends very quickly, that they have limited time and money and resources to get to that truth. If you ask founders, most of them will tell you that they failed because they ran out of money. That's nonsense. They just misallocated the money you gave them. And so why not give them the tools necessary to help them grow? So this way, we do less investments, spend more time with them, and deliver a much higher return to our investors while giving back to a community to help them develop their own economic, ecosystem.
Talking today with Sean Shepard of GrowthX, talking about, I guess he's reaffirming some of the things that we talk about on this show, about getting product to market being so important and really the difference maker when it comes to staying alive and thriving in entrepreneurship. When we come back, we're going to ask Sean to stick around a little bit. We're going to be talking about innovative strategy and maybe a little bit about Sacramento's unique opportunities in entrepreneurship. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Rockland Audi. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to Mark Haney, igniting the entrepreneurial revolution with the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of the accounting firm Clifton Larson Allen. I'm Mark Haney, and I am rejoined by Sean Shepard. He is the co-founder of GrowthX. Now, Sean, you guys are all about innovation. We've been talking about getting these products to market as being so important, but sometimes that takes some creativity in and of itself, finding ways to bring products to market, maybe in a different way. And I guess my question to start this segment is, how do you put yourself in the right mindset to think differently?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because the four pillars of the academy and how we think about education and developing other humans starts with mindset. It goes mindset, mastery, career, and community. And mindset's always number one. You've got to get your mind right. You need a growth mindset. The idea that every aspect of your entire life is available for improvement. The idea that in a human-centered role and world, there's no distinction between personal and professional development. Dr. Carol Dweck out of Stanford University has done some amazing research on this. She's got a book called Mindset that I highly recommend everyone read. That's all about the difference between people who have a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. So here's a great example. In our world, we replace the word rejection with feedback. And we view feedback as a gift. Okay, we replace the word assume with hypothesize. Think of how that changes your brain and the next step in your thought process. Yeah. When you go from operating on an assumption, which my dad always told me, never assume anything except responsibility for your own behavior. He was right about that. Doesn't mean I've done it. you place assumption with hypothesis. What are you going to do next? Hopefully you're going to test it instead of act as if.
Right.
And that's where things get dangerous with founders. They get biased into their own beliefs. They drink their own Kool-Aid. They, in fact, are just a walking meat suit of Kool-Aid themselves. I mean, they've bought into whatever
they're
doing, and they should. But what they also have to recognize is that the market's going to tell them their whole opportunity. Everything they communicate to the world should be to generate a response from the market. I'm here to learn. I think I've got something that can help you. I'm not sure. I hypothesize this value. Let's have a conversation to understand that. 90% of what we all take to market the first time is wrong. The goal is to just be 89% wrong tomorrow based on what we learned today. So that's mindset. You've got to get yourself into that. You need to be hungry and humble and be a learn-it-all, not a know-it-all.
So as we take our product to market and we begin to learn, we are faced with the reality that companies like Uber and the Amazons of the world, I guess there's not too many Amazons, but those kind of disruptive factors are coming to every industry. So I always have the mindset of let's focus as small as we can in a market and try to create something unique, differentiated, hopefully disruptive, maybe at some point. But I mean, we have these big platforms and ways of thinking are really changing some of the old ways we used to think about building businesses. I mean, how do you see that in San Francisco?
Yeah, I think some of it is dangerous thinking to follow. So for example, what you'll find if you look through the history of disruptive technologies in the marketplace, it's typically the fast followers that end up winning because the innovators typically,
Don't have to be first to market in order to win. It might not even be the right strategy.
No, the pioneers are always the ones with the arrows in them, right?
Right.
So they're the ones that learn all the hard lessons. And, you know, I'm not sure. There's a lot of conversation right now whether or not Uber's going to survive this whole thing because they're nowhere near profitability. They've invested themselves into market share, but they still have yet to demonstrate to the world that they can make money on a single transaction.
Yeah.
And until they can, the jury will be out.
I know
that's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow.
Well, that's what we thought with Amazon. Obviously, they were unprofitable for many, many years. That focus on growth, it's really worked out okay for them.
Well, they got the profitability a lot faster than a lot of these companies do. And in the fourth industrial revolution, which we're just entering now, where 40 to 50% of the jobs will be taken over by robots as repetitive and non-critical thinking in nature, we have to prepare our workforce and our economies for the fact that these companies will come and go faster than they've ever come before. For example, today, the average tenure on the S&P 500 is like 15 years. In the 50s, it was 75 years for one to get turned over of 500 companies. Things are moving so quickly.
Well, as robots and machine learning enter into the mainstream of the business community, as the Ubers and the Amazons and these large platform type companies come in, I mean, this machine learning, do you think it actually replaces jobs or do you think it complements the worker?
Well, it's going to replace a lot of the low-level jobs that do not require creative thinking. We already have a salad machine making me salads in my office.
That's
pretty awesome, frankly. The thing that we have to, but what that does do is it creates new opportunities to add value in other ways. So for example, we just had the 50th anniversary of the ATM machine. Okay. The ATM machine just turned 50 like a month ago. When those first came out, the entire world was decrying this is the end of bank tellers and retail banks.
Right.
Well, we've tripled the number of tellers, and we've 5x'd the number of retail locations. Why? What are we doing differently? Well, those same tellers are now adding value in other ways. They're becoming loan officers. They're getting you signed up for lines of credit. They're coming up with all sorts of interesting and unique ways of creating debt for the American consumer.
We're better serving our customer.
Yeah, we're better serving our customer. No, but we are. We're adding value in different ways. So technology doesn't just replace one particular job. It creates a whole host of new ones.
We only
And that's where people have to change their mindset. This is not a zero-sum game. You're
right.
Not taking a job away, therefore there's no other one. Factory work will come back to the U.S., but it's going to come back in the form of robotics, automation, and 3D printing, because it'll be cheaper to build most of the things that we're building overseas here through 3D printers than what we're doing right now in China, which is the world's factory for now. And if you haven't been to China, you know, it's not a good thing what's going on over there. You cannot breathe. You have
right.
to walk
yeah,
around with a freaking mask.
I have definitely
mask.
Been there, it's horrible. I was there for the Olympics, and they had cleaned it up for the Olympics, and it was still bad. But you know, just as we kind of close out this segment, Sean, and think about advice to entrepreneurship. There's so many people out there that talk about being disruptive, and they even brag about their product that's going to be so disruptive. I guess my question of you, as you advise entrepreneurs, is it better to be loud about how disruptive you're going to be, or is it better to have a secret sauce that and maybe go into a disruptive approach more quietly?
Loud, I think the question really is that if loud is part of your customer acquisition strategy and it works, then be loud. But if it's not and it doesn't, then don't. Traction speaks louder than words ever have.
Traction.
And the only thing I care about is whether or not you've got real customers that are strangers paying you for a product or service for a problem they can clearly articulate that you solve better than anything else they've done. That's the only measure that matters. The hard part is getting to that point. And that's where most entrepreneurs fall down. They don't know how to do that quickly, well, and within the time allotted based on the resources that they have. So they need to just stop. Focus on that execution. Get clear on who their customer is, where they are, how to find them, how to talk to them in a way that gets them to provide that feedback, and then whether or not that's a profitable venture. That's it.
I am here with getting some sound advice and appreciated knowledge from Sean Shepherd, a man who has founded GrowthX, but he's talking about focusing on driving new business from strangers and that traction speak louder than words. I love that line. When we return, I will be joined by Jared Taylor, founder and chief people catcher of Black Rifle Coffee. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of the Entrepreneurs Organization of Sacramento and the law firm Greenberg Traurig. This is the Haney Biz Project.
And now, back to the Haney Biz Project with investorpreneur Mark Haney.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Hub International. I'm Mark Haney, and I am here with a man who has built an incredible coffee cup company. It's called Black Rifle Coffee. Mr. Jared Taylor is in the house. How are you doing, JT?
Oh, great, great. You know, I have to give I have to give a shout out to our president, Evan. We give him the credit of founder. It was his idea.
What should we call you, JT?
I mean, me and Matt were there from day one, but Evan, it was Evan's idea. You know, Evan came to us and said, "Hey, you should do a coffee. Let's do a special coffee for Article 15."
Yeah.
And we ramped that up, and it sold really well. And the feedback came in like, "Hey, this is the best coffee I've had. Can you guys do it again?" And Evan was already like, "I'm already on it, guys. We're starting a coffee company."
So now Article 15 happened prior to the coffee company.
Yes.
Talk to us about how the whole thing got started and maybe try to give us an overview of the entire enterprise.
So at the time, back in late 2012, early 2013 time frame, I was running my own personal photography studio and video editing and production with a friend of mine named Gary Stevens, who's our chief graphic designer at Black Rifle Coffee now. So pretty much everything you see is coming out of Gary's head.
Okay.
But we were doing tactical advertising. So coming from a tactical background, we were going to tactical businesses that make equipment saying, we can do better than the art people that you're hiring now. Because
okay,
we know
you're a veteran, so you know a lot about tactical stuff.
And it saved owners money. It saved departments money because now you can send us your gear. I know what it is. You don't have to send a sales rep to make sure that we're assembling it properly and displaying it properly. So
so you're the marketing guys behind that stuff.
I was fascinated with just the editing and the art and the film and stuff like that. And I came across Matt Best, who had just created a YouTube video and sent it in to me asking if I would share on one of our Facebook pages. And I was like, this is the front of camera genius that I've always looked for.
Okay.
And literally my first message to him was, fly to El Paso, please.
The front of camera genius. Yeah. So he is the talent.
Yeah. So he flew out to El Paso. We brainstormed all kinds of cool ideas. And then essentially was like, you know, I was telling him about the tactical industry. I go, you know, these brands are going to try and scoop you up. But at the end of the day, you'll never know how much you truly grew their business. Or we can start our own. And he was like, well, let's start our own.
Okay,
so went to work that weekend on creating a logo, and we came out with, you know, we had saw a gap in the military market where everybody was too serious. Every military apparel site was all about, I'm a soldier, I kill, I do this, I do that, I'm a Spartan, whatever. Like,
yeah.
And we were like, oh, no, we're just going to make fun of ourselves. So
okay.
Article 15 is actually what you get in the military when you're in trouble.
okay.
So we created Article 15 clothing and just came out the gate with super edgy and quality, like in reference to relatable military jokes.
Okay.
In video content. And
well, it's interesting that you took this. You know, we're talking about a large opportunity, and you look for a very narrow portion, and you focused a marketing approach. That was very specialized and even kind of narrow, right? Going after the military side of things. And now, how has it worked out for you? Obviously, with that focus, you're able to really attract some loyalty.
We saw within the first few months of us pushing hard was that these guys want to be spoken to like that. They like the jokes and they relate to the jokes, and too many brands and companies out there were too afraid to go down that road, not realizing that, you know, a soccer mom that's going to be offended by one of our jokes doesn't buy a Benchmade knife. So why do you care if you're getting edgy and in your marketing when it comes to
But that controversial aspect of the way you guys do business, I mean, how has that helped or hurt your business? Because I can see a lot of people being offended by your controversy. Or is the controversy part of your brand?
The people that are offended by anything that we do are not the people that are ever going to buy our products. So we don't care.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just as a guy that's, you know, sitting here going, you know, everybody could be an entrepreneur. You know, we have this, I guess, wide open embracement of the population, I suppose, on this show, but narrowing that target, obviously it's been effective, but there's been no drawback in being
not when it comes to business. I mean, yeah, we've seen some times where we caught flack trying to visit soldiers in the hospital, specifically Brooks Army Medical Center. Their senior staff was just like, we're trying to go visit guys that were writing into us saying, we are hurt and we would love for you to come see us. And they were giving us flack trying to get there, like over, and it was over like, well, you guys are a for-profit company. We're like, so your injured soldiers are asking us to come visit you. Yeah. Why are you giving us pushback on this?
So you guys relate very well to the guys that are over risking their life for our country, which is, I think that's an area where I relate pretty well to, having my son be an infantry Marine and actually taking one for the team in Afghanistan. But what? Now, you are not based out of Sacramento,
no.
But you're here in Sacramento. Why?
I came up here for your show.
Well, for the show, no doubt. But there's a secondary reason that you are here. You're here with a mutual friend,
yes, Jordan,
Mr. Jordan Darling.
Jordan Darling is responsible for why we're here right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Jordan Darling, for those of you who don't know, he's been on the show. He is building or has built the first electric jet ski. It's a super lightweight watercraft. His company is based here in Sacramento, and he's got guys coming from all over the planet to find a way to buy his jet ski. Why did you why did you love Jordan Darling jet skis, so much, and what brought you to Freeform?
Well, it was recently, it comes back to kind of my title, which now is the Vice President of Business Development because, we're growing up.
Okay.
But it used to, Evan, our president, used to call me the Chief People Collector because
okay.
It's like, hey, I want that market. Go find out who's good in it and who people respect in it, and let's all become friends with them. So recently I have been just towering into the action sports market and have become friends with a lot of the Nitro Circus staff and crew and athletes. And I've always wanted to ride a stand-up jet ski, and finally I'm like, hey, you know what? I want to get one. And when I asked them, who do I go to for an awesome stand-up jet ski, they all pointed to Freeform Factory.
To Freeform, yeah. And so you're getting one made here, custom. Is it for you personally or
yes.
for Black Rifle?
Well, it's for Black Rifle.
Okay,
it's wrapped in Black Rifle. Jordan and I are...
It's a business expense.
Yeah, of course. Jordan and I are finishing the wrap as we speak.
Oh,
like,
nice.
We pause to come here, and then
after
we're shooting, we're going back to finish the wrap.
Now, you know what? I've steered all the way around Black Rifle. I mean, it started off introducing you is the coffee guy. Let's talk about the coffee part of your business. What's going on with Black Rifle Coffee?
So we're experiencing a lot of growth this year. We're up to over 85 employees.
Wow.
We bought a building in Salt Lake City, 41,000 square feet on 3.5 acres. So we're settling into that. We're doing a lot of construction in the building to make it work for us and focusing on our core competencies of the business, which is roasting and producing coffee and content and marketing.
Right. And what business are you attempting to disrupt in Black Rifle? Or maybe you're not even attempting to disrupt. What's your niche and how are you most different on the Black Rifle coffee side of things?
Well, we have seen that coffee over the ages has always been predominantly essentially owned by kind of a hipster mentality. And was never given a conservative
for us
option.
Old guys. What's hipster?
Just that's more as of a left, a liberal, kind of a Portland, Oregon kind of vibe. Like, so there never was a conservative option.
And I apologize to anybody this may offend. But you know what? I think entrepreneurship is about pushing those boundaries. So we are allowing you some freedom here to rock and roll in your way. But okay, so you wanted to compete with those because there's a segment of the consumer base that doesn't fit that mold.
Yes,
and you're hitting that segment.
Hard workers, blue collar workers. We're talking oil workers, mechanics, construction workers, city workers, police force, firemen, military
yeah.
members. Like, this is who this coffee's for. And I've got the greatest quote that I've ever heard from someone walk into our Salt Lake City, which is just kind of a showroom. We offer free coffee. He just said, "This coffee shop, I don't feel guilty walking in with drywall all over my pants."
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're going for. We're going for the working class American that loves America, that rolls his sleeves up and gets to work.
The working class American that loves America. Any final thoughts about building small businesses? Obviously, your businesses have begun to take off. They're not considered probably small anymore. But any advice to entrepreneurs who are going through the different phases that it takes to get up to the 85 employee level?
I would just say, there are a couple books out there. I heard you guys mention one earlier. Traction is a good book.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all coming from our CEO, essentially. Made all the owners and the C staff read the series of books, Good to Great, Built to Last,
yeah.
Traction. These are the building blocks. If you start with this knowledge that these guys are sharing right now, you're going to solve a lot of problems before you even run into them.
Now, Good to Great, I got to interrupt you here on this for a second just to make sure I got this right. So Good to Great is one of the books you guys are reading. Now, there are some companies in Good to Great that are no longer with us, sadly.
Yes, there are.
Well, maybe it's not sadly.
I think the best thing to take away from Good to Great is his essentially definition of what a level 5 leader is and how to find them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love it. Good to great. I agree. Great book. A lot to learn. And I think reading has become so underrated. And reading the right book, getting the right information, you may agree with some, you may disagree with some, but it's where we get that information from. And I think the best way to learn is by diving in and doing it yourself. The second best way to learn is by talking to guys like you, talking to guys like Sean Shepard, who are in the trenches building businesses and have the scars, the battle scars to show for it. So I want to thank you for coming on the show today. I want to thank Sean Shepard for coming on as well, sharing his very informative thoughts about driving business. Marcus, any words from our sponsors we want to talk about at this point?
Absolutely. We would be nowhere without our sponsors. So I want to do a special shout-out to my boys, Murad and Derek, over at Sun Systems Technology. You guys are kicking butt. Keep it up. Ethan Conrad Properties. Ethan and his team over there are doing some great things for entrepreneurs and have a really great event going on, so check that out. And then also a shameless point plug for my boys over Brian at Limitless Limos. Thanks so much for supporting the show.
Nice. And next week we got an action-packed show. Next week we got a guy named Tom Candris. He's with Package One. He is the founder of Package One, and he just had a very successful exit. He is the entrepreneur next door. He is actually my next door neighbor, and my close buddy Tom is coming on the show to talk about Package One and the exit that he just had. But we're also going to have Greg Connolly of Trifecta. He has built a company that is focused on delivering ready-to-eat meals right here. Well, he's based right here in Sacramento, but he's sending his food all over the country. That's next week. When we return today, we will share our takeaways and our closing thoughts about, you know, the innovation and the mantra that I learned on the biggest sales call of my life. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Ethan Conrad Properties and the financial advisors, Stifel Financial. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back for Mark's takeaways from today's
Welcome back. This is the Haney Biz Project, brought to you by Silver's HR. I'm Mark Haney. I'm back here with Marcus Haney. And we've been asking the Field of Dreams question: if you build it, will they come? And my answer to that is yes, if. Again, I'm back here with Marcus Haney. We've been talking. I thought Sean Shepard of GrowthX was very educational in talking about the fact that driving business, driving the product to the market through sales and marketing, is actually more important than building the product itself.
Right, absolutely.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's from the expert himself, right? So
yeah.
I'm sitting here learning from Sean, so I appreciate that. And what he said that stood out to me was the market really dictates the success of a company, right? So if the market doesn't take hold to what you're selling, then you really don't have anything to go on there.
Yeah, I mean, I have the philosophy. I talk about this once in a while. We're here at Mark Tank here at the Allegiant Giving Center in Rockland. And on my back wall, I have my mantra: yes, if, dot, dot, dot. Yes, anything is possible if you do enough of the little things and enough of the big things. Anything is possible. And one of those things that you have to do, if they build it, you have to sell something, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of those things you have to do. So, hey, will this product work? Yes. If you sell enough product, you're going to have a very successful business. But so many times we get ourselves caught up in the idea that it is all about the product, and us sales guys kind of get kicked to the curb a little bit.
Right.
So
yeah.
I think Sean dispelled that that rumor or that that myth, I suppose, that exists in some areas. But a great sales company or sales effort can actually take an average commodity type product, and you can actually create a monopoly or, you know, a very successful company if you have the right sales and marketing.
Yeah, well, look at Sean's record, right? I mean, his past performance was being a sales and marketing guy, and he ended up selling a bunch of businesses. So I guess that's the basis of what it takes to be any sort of success.
Well, I mean, you look at even Black Rifle Coffee, right? These guys started off saying, we're marketing guys,
right?
And you know where are we going to go after? And they went after Article 15, the clothing and the tactical stuff, and then they decided we're going to go after coffee, right? It didn't start off with the product. Now they started talking to their customers, and they created a differentiated product and worked its way into what's becoming a very successful business, all starting with the sales and marketing effort.
Right. I think they're doing some great stuff by saying they're going to hire 5,000 veterans to their company and things along those lines. So I'm really excited to see what Black Rifle Coffee does for the working class American and veterans like myself.
Yeah. And I think the best sales guys, you know, makes you think about like, who are these people that drive the most sales, right? We all know guys that are salespeople, right? And you kind of know they're salespeople because they're always trying to sell you stuff.
Used car guy.
Yeah, they might be a used car feeling guy or just one of those guys that are sort of always in your ear, you know, always be closing and those kind of things. And then there's those salespeople that I kind of think of them as the masters or maybe even the grandmasters who can rally people around themselves and get them to run through a brick wall for you, paint the fence for you, maybe even pay you to allow them to paint the fence similar to the way that Tom Sawyer did with his friends in the famous Mark Twain novel. But the best, the grandmaster salespeople, they really aren't selling, right? They're that good. If you don't know a grandmaster salesperson, well, chances are, you know, you do know one, but they're so good you can't tell that they're actually influencing you and leading you in a way. So, I mean, I think if we start off with the premise that we gotta make some product, you know, we gotta make the molecules move, we've gotta drive product into the market, then we can figure out how to continue to tweak our products, or if not doing that simultaneously. And it just, you know, thinking about the yes if slogan, and where I learned that was actually on one of the biggest sales opportunities of my life. It was $100 million opportunity, and I was nervous, and I went into the room, and the guy that was sitting across from me was the CEO of a $35 billion a year company, and I was like, wow, this is a big deal. So I remember this well. And As we began to talk about what I was bringing to the party and what he was going to bring, he said, "You know, Mark, I got to take this to the board because my board is a no because board. I'm a yes if guy, right? But my board is kind of a no because board." And so we hashed out a lot of the details of the transaction. And as we were walking out the room, we had bonded on Lou Holtz at Notre Dame, and he had this signed football from Lou Holtz. Yeah, I happen to have it right here to remind me of the story. And he said, "Hey, Mark, you're a Lou Holtz fan. You want this football?" And I'm like, "Yeah, thanks. I'll take that." And so he gives me this football. And as we're walking toward the end of his office door, he says to Mark, "Hey, if I can get this past my board, you know, you think we could get this ball across the goal line?" And you know what I told him? "Yes, if. If we do enough of the little things, if you can sell it to your board, we can make this happen." And I think that makes me think about Sacramento and the opportunity that we have right here in Sacramento. I mean, Sean Shepard is looking at opportunities right here in Sacramento. He is a mogul in the Bay Area in terms of entrepreneurship and accelerating entrepreneurship right there in San Francisco in the Silicon Valley. And he is looking at how to bring that opportunity and that way of thinking to Sacramento. And I think that's something that maybe all of us as Sacramentoans should look at is, you know what, we are known as a government town, but we are going to need to look three hills over, right? The next Amazon, there's an Amazon effect, an Uber effect, a innovation effect that is happening whether we like it or not, and it is happening in Sacramento or it's going to happen to Sacramento. So us as entrepreneurs, I think we have to embrace what is happening and really sell our way out of this opportunity. It's not a jam, because I look at it as an opportunity. And the entrepreneurs of Sacramento, the business owners of Sacramento, these are our salespeople. We are the salespeople of Sacramento for Sacramento. So as we get ready to kind of wind it down today, I guess I have to say, you know, thanks again to Sean and JT. Thank you to Marcus. And thank you to all the men out there and women that are fighting for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. To the 13 stripes, to the 50 stars, and to the one big American innovation that's always worth fighting for, yours. Never above you, never below you, always by your side.